After the bloodiest battle of the entire Afghan war, 8,000 Taliban soldiers surrendered to the Northern Alliance and US Special Forces under guarantee that their lives would be spared. Today, up to 3,000 of those men lie in an unmarked desert grave, and American soldiers stand accused by numerous eyewitnesses of being involved in their disappearance. Early excerpts from this film were shown to the European Parliament. We had received a warning from Afghanistan that the bodies of the murdered prisoners and thus the evidence might be removed. Following pressure from Brussels, the United Nations agreed to monitor the mass graves of Dashti Laili. In the middle of June, when we first revealed a small part of our story about the mass graves here at Dashti Laili, the Pentagon effectively denied that the atrocity had taken place at all. They also denied that American soldiers were anywhere near the vicinity, nor did any American personnel have any knowledge whatsoever of such a thing taking place. We can now reveal that the Pentagon was lying. Human rights lawyer Andrew McEntee was heavily involved in the establishment of the International Criminal Court and the man responsible for much of the investigation into the disappeared under General Pinochet's rule in Chile.
The Department of Defense, at least the Pentagon, must say what the role was of the Special Forces. It must, for example, say whether or not they had effective command and control over the Afghanis.
The Pentagon has refused many requests over a long period of time to be interviewed for this film, but a spokesman for the State Department has made it clear his government would prefer the focus of any inquiry to be on the actions of Afghan soldiers rather than their own.
We are looking into the circumstances surrounding the events that are reported in recent press coverage, as well as other allegations of human rights abuses and war crimes through our embassy in Kabul. We've stressed and continue to stress to Afghan authorities the importance of investigating allegations of human rights violations and war crimes.
Our story begins in November 2001, in a mountain pass close to the town of Kunduz in northern Afghanistan. Taliban soldiers have come to give themselves up under assurances they will not be harmed. These are the first pictures of their surrender. Within days, over 4,000 will be missing, most of them dead. They were murdered by America's closest Afghan allies. But what was the role of US soldiers themselves in this massacre?
Good afternoon, this is Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, CFRO. You're listening to the Monday Brown Bagger. My name is Reg Argue. I also have my co-host Tanya Hill, and that was from the documentary on the Afghanistan massacre. It was done by Mr. Doran. And that is seriously a question that we should be asking in reference, because if a country talks about exporting freedom, then they better be willing to stand by that. And now I'm going to hand it over to Tanya, who's going to do a quick introduction about our guest right now. Go ahead, Tanya.
Hi, thanks. Well, today we are honored to have Dr. Yunus Parsabanab in the studio. He was born in Tabriz, Iran in 1937, and he's currently professor of political science at Strayer University in Washington, D.C., He has been a guest lecturer on politics and culture at various academic institutions in Washington, D.C., New Jersey, and Michigan. He's also taught advanced courses in subjects such as history of peasant revolts and national liberation movements in the Middle East and North Africa. Dr. Banab has been publishing books and articles since 1973. Some include 100 Years History of Iranian Political Parties and Organizations and The Strident Voice of Pan-Iranianism. He has been invited by the Iranian Center for Peace, Freedom, and Social Justice, sponsored by StopWar.ca. He's been invited to the SFU Harbor Center on Thursday, July 3rd at 7 p.m. to speak about war. And in the lecture is entitled Who Benefits from War? And he's going to discuss why are we saying no to war, who benefits from war, and covering topics such as the economic benefits of war. So it sounds like a very interesting lecture. I'm definitely attending. And again, it's Thursday, July 3rd, 7 p.m. at the SFU Harbor Center. And the admission is by donation. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Banap.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
I just wanted to ask, looking into history, it seems that power seems to come from the shadows, controlling government officials like puppets. With this in mind, who stands to gain the most from a possible attack on Iran?
Well, this topic, who is benefiting from any war, including the possibility of American invasion of Iran in the near future. So I'll give you at least three important point of views on who benefits from the war. One point of view is claiming that war hurts everybody. Every nation, every class within a nation, and every group, regardless of their religious background or their class background. This is one view which is somehow prevalent among those people that they consider themselves pacifist. But then there is another view that it claims, and then it makes a good point that wars in history always benefited the ruling elites, especially the ruling elites that they did win the war. At this point, for example, Iraq war, which is going to be almost 6 years, naturally from the point of view of majority of Iraqis, it hurt their economy, destroyed their cities, and great number of people of Iraq became refugees in the border countries and other Middle Eastern countries. So it didn't benefit at all people of Iraq. And naturally, then people of Iraq are asking for their national sovereignty. They like to see that the U.S. forces, all the military and non-military interventionist forces to withdraw from Iraq. And at this point, world public opinion, it seems all over the world, is behind this idea that the Iraqis are right, they are asking for national sovereignty, and all the interventionist forces, military forces, should withdraw. If not tonight, by tomorrow morning. But then benefits, still certain individuals, certain groups are benefiting from this war. Number one is a military-industrial complex in the U.S. Companies and transnational companies that they are within this network, military-industrial network, or in fact, I can expand that one. It is military-industrial media network is benefiting from this war. Halliburton used to be a transnational company about ranking 127. Today, Halliburton is one of the 10 top important transnational corporations in the world. What happened in the last 5 years? Halliburton tremendously benefited from the war in Iraq. So the people in general, American workers and other toiling masses in the United States, they have lost. They have they had no benefit in this war. But the ruling elites, but especially transnational corporations, they have completely won, and they have you know, increase their assets and their income and their influence in the world.
And what happens is CBS News just put out, lo and behold, we're talking about the propaganda of the mainstream media, but CBS News put out this article called Israel Prodding U.S. to Attack Iran. Now, what I'd like to know, the question being, how can a nation like Israel, who already has nuclear weapons itself, and with its appalling human rights violation against the Palestinian people, call for any type of military strike against another nation when it itself has not followed even the Geneva Convention? I mean, basically, the Jewish people went through horrendous treatment in the past, so why are they doing the exact same thing, treatment, to other people who are not share their faith?
Well, Israel historically, especially since 1967 war, has become an extension of the U.S. in the Middle East. Israel is considered by the majority of people in the Middle East, now even in Europe, to be just part of the United States. The U.S. will order and Israeli government will act. At this point, as far as I know, a great number of people inside Israel, they are against war. They are against extension of war. We don't hear that usually in American media. In the U.S. media, you never hear what people of Israel are asking. They are asking for no war. Reports by Palestinians, even Palestinians, that they have been fighting for liberation of Palestine, for establishing democratic secular government in Palestine. These Palestinians have still access to Israeli cities, especially Tel Aviv. They are journalists. They go there and they report to us that good number of people of Israel are against war. They like their country. They like to have security, but they are against, you know, the spread of war from Iraq into Iran. So Olmert is in trouble because of his corruption. He is facing one of the most scandalous at this point event in history of Israel, and it is very possible that Olmert will act and behave more in favor of the White House, which is completely, at this point, controlled by neocons. And neocons have connection, not only politically, but religiously, with Israeli hardliners. So that possibility exists that if the United States, especially in the next 185 days before election, to strike against Iran, not directly, but by using Israelis. The point is that Israel will never act and behave unless U.S. is ordering Israel. So Israel is not acting as an independent actor in the Middle East. And by Israel, I mean the government of Olmert.
How would any possible military attack on Iran weaken internal pro-democracy movements within Iran?
Yeah. Well, you see, any invasion of Iran or any type of intervention by the U.S. government will be targeting democratic forces. This has been almost proven to me by reading a lot about U.S. intentions. At this point, if somebody asks me, if U.S. invades Iran, what will be the purpose, foreign policy objective of U.S.? I would say foreign policy objective of U.S. will be to crush democratic forces in Iran, not necessarily to overthrow and bring regime change by overthrowing Islamic regime. But usually U.S., if U.S. invades Iran directly or indirectly, that will be more or less targeting democratic forces in Iran, which is spreading all over Iran, and all walks of life, people belonging to all walks of life now are engaged in search for democracy inside Iran. So U.S. ruling elites are against democratic forces, especially in a country like Iran, which they know the good number, good portion of these democratic forces are not in tune with U.S. foreign policy objectives, U.S. imperial project in the Middle East.
And with the U.S. planning to ultimately have 58 permanent military bases in Iraq, which is almost double what they currently have at being 30, what type of backlash do you see, in your own opinion, which may come from the ordinary Middle Eastern people if the United States were to plan to expand further occupation of other nations in the Middle East?
History of U.S. Imperial expansion in the last 100 shows that any time U.S. occupied a country or created a military base in that country, the purpose was to use that military base in order to invade, occupy another country and create another military base. I know no country in which U.S. established a military base and they did withdraw from that country. If we go back to history, in 1942, 43, 45, U.S. as expanded in Europe against fascism, established military bases in Italy and in Germany. And now we are in the year 2008, still those bases do exist. All these countries that U.S. established military bases, they never withdrew unless in that country there was a revolution, like in Iranian case in 1979. Otherwise, U.S. will never withdraw peacefully, legally, after even establishing a base. So I think if in Iraq they succeed to establish those military bases, their purpose is to move forward, because neocons who are now controlling the White House, and I hope by November 4 of this year they will be kicked out, these forces, neocons, they have no exit strategy. They don't believe in exit strategy. When they invaded Afghanistan, their purpose was not to withdraw. Their purpose was to invade Iraq. When they invaded Iraq, their purpose is to finally either completely occupy countries like Syria, Lebanon, and finally, eventually, Iran, or simply bring regime change in those countries by other means of intervention. So military bases in Iraq will be dangerous to a great number of countries in the Middle East, but especially to Lebanon, Syria, and Iran. These are the only three countries in the greater Middle East, which at this point we don't have American military presence or American military bases. So the purpose is to spread all these military bases in Iraq in order to invade those three countries that do not have any military bases, U.S. military bases or U.S. military presence. So I would say that in my judgment, the way I am reading the situation now, I think in Iraq, great number of people, more than now that they are involved, they will be resisting in different forms and shape if this pact goes through and it's confirmed or approved by National Assembly of Iraq, and it becomes illegal for the United States to establish bases in Iraq, I think great number of Iraqis will resist.
Well, you bring up an interesting topic. I was just reading lately about the military bases being established in the Czech Republic and in Poland, and the resistance against them. The U.S. says that well, it's an expansion of their Star Wars program, and possibly military dominance when it comes to Russia and China. But they say that it's for stopping a missile attack from Iran, who does not have nuclear weapons at the moment, and Do you think that that's that they're just using that as an excuse to set up more military bases, to maybe possibly control or confront Russia? It seems like an extension of the Cold War, or just a continuation of an old story.
Neocons that they are, again, I am emphasizing that they are in control of the White House, they divide Europe into two important parts, very distinct from each other. One is called Old Europe. Old Europe covers those countries like Sweden, and to a certain degree at the beginning of American invasion of war, country of Germany. These are Old Europe. France is Old Europe to neocons. That means when they oppose U.S. expansion, when they oppose U.S. interventionist policies, they become Old Europe. Eastern European countries are considered by neocons New Europe. Poland and Czech Republic are, with Romania and Bulgaria, are the most important new European countries that U.S. would like to bring them into NATO, increase their voting power in NATO. Already, NATO is almost pretty much dominated by the U.S., but George Bush and neocons, they would like to increase the membership of NATO by bringing these Eastern European countries. So this is an excuse that we are establishing military bases in Czech Republic and in Poland in order to prevent Iranian attack. Every individual, every student of military history, they know that Iranian government would not be even able in the next 10 years to strike Poland or Czech Republic or Romania by those missiles or missiles. So I would say they are just making an excuse, using Iran as a scapegoat, using Iran as a scarecrow to expand, create certain type of panic and fear among the masses. But fortunately, people of Poland and people of Czech Republic, they are not buying this time American argument that we are here to defend you. They know they are there to expand their military bases.
And since Bush has come to power in the U.S., they have racked up, in his administration only, a $4 trillion debt. That's just in just about 7.5 years. It's created a mass amount of homeless and American refugees in the United States. In turn, it has farming out of jobs to other nations, which has hollowed out the American economy. Now, with the Royal Bank of Scotland and others talking about a possible global meltdown on the stock market becoming more and more possible over the next 3 months, with this in mind, I have a two-part question for you. Part one, how long do you see any type of possible recession lasting within the U.S.? And part two, could one of the reasons why the Bush regime is pushing for war with Iran being that this conflict would further line the pocketbooks of his corporate cronies and also at the same time would break the back of the ordinary American people who do not want war and just want their troops home in the United States where they belong?
You know, United States now, for the first time that I know, inside United States, we have great number of refugees, that these refugees are internal refugees. In Washington, D.C., you will see good number of refugees from New Orleans, the victims of Katrina. So poverty, unemployment, massively destroying fabric of life, social life, in the United States among the people that either they are unemployed or they are underemployed or they are suffering from a lot of financial family problems. And victims of Katrina is the best example. In other words, it is very important for intellectuals as well as people in general in the West and in countries like Iraq, Iran, Pakistan, and Afghanistan, to know that American invasion of Iraq is not only hurting people of Iraq. American invasion of Iraq, American possible invasion of Iran is equally hurting American people, American working class. You know very well that out of 300 million Americans today, United States has the greatest working class population in the world. In other words, if you ask me which country has highest number of working class, I wouldn't say China, I wouldn't say Russia. United States is almost 95 million workers are in the United States. That is working class population of United States. Majority of these working class populations are victim of recession. They are losing those workers that they worked for many, many years in the United States royally and loyally. They worked honestly for U.S. economy, losing their homes. Their children cannot have access to proper schooling and proper education. Unemployment is increasing. Underemployment is increasing. Good number of students that they finish colleges in the United States are not working in their field. They are working in other fields just because they got their degree. So in a way, there is a kind of indirect unemployment in the United States, which is not even reported by U.S. government, the Labor Department. Labor Department only reports those people that they are unemployed. But there are indirect way of creating unemployment. And on top of it, recession. In the last 6 months, prices of food commodities have increased in the United States more than double. So it is a very, very unique situation. When I came to United States to study in 1961, in the United States, it was impossible for me to compare any part of United States with any third world country. But today, you can come to Washington, D.C. I will show you areas in Washington, D.C. that kids are suffering from malnutrition. People are suffering from unemployment. And you can see in front of churches and inside churches in Washington, D.C., refugees from New Orleans and other parts of Louisiana and Mississippi, victims of Katrina.
Well, sorry, it seems that, I was watching a recent documentary on PBS about the working poor, and you're talking about the working class, and it doesn't seem like the old working class where maybe they're part of a labor union and they actually could buy a house and they could send their kids to school. Now it seems that people are working three jobs. Minimum wage hasn't been raised at all. Like, it's $5 and something cents. And so it just seems that the somebody, I guess the rich are benefiting from this massive amount of people who are laboring but not being able to make ends meet or put food on the table. And also with Katrina, it seems that private companies are benefiting from disasters, and that the privatization of disaster, natural disaster, war, is benefiting companies such as Halliburton, or I can't remember the company that was down in Katrina that was setting
Blackwater.
Up.
Blackwater.
Yeah, Blackwater.
Blackwater.
And, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it doesn't seem like the majority of people in the U.S. connect their state of living, what's happening in the United States, with war, with the fact that the U.S. has gone into Iraq. And it doesn't seem like there's a disconnect between what's happening at home and what's happening overseas.
I would have said that that was the case up until 3-4 months ago. But believe me, in the last 3-4 months, we have seen tremendous shift in the attitude of young people in the United States. Good number of these young people, always in history of post-war U.S., they never voted. Now, great number of young people in the United States are preparing to vote on November 4th. And they, in fact, prove that they are going to vote, because in primary elections, great number of young people that they don't belong to Republican Party, they don't belong to Democratic Party, they are considered independent, they voted. Usually they voted for Obama. And now that Obama has become candidate of a Democratic Party, I see a lot of my students that they never voted, and they were very honest to tell in class that they never vote on November 4th. Now they are planning to vote. So, yes, there is still disconnect. Mm-hmm. But awareness is there, and I would say public opinion in the United States is now on the brink of joining world public opinion in denouncing U.S. Actually, they do not go as far as we do in terms of searching the origins of American imperial ambitions and American world project. But at this point, economic conditions in the United States have made a lot of people, but especially young people, to become aware, and they know that what happened in Katrina, victims of Katrina, are one of the byproducts of American invasion of Iraq, that rich is getting richer, poor is getting poorer, exactly like third world countries, and islands of prosperity are living in have been created by rich people, these islands of prosperity and glorious life within and inside the oceans of tremendous poverty. It used to be comparing third world to first world, but now if you come to United States, you will see United States by itself has become an ocean, but then islands of prosperity, but the ocean of poverty. People are either suffering from poverty or unemployment or recession. Recession is hitting the United States, and in fact, I don't even believe that the recession will come to an end by change of cabinet by November 4th.
And we're going to have to quickly go on to our next guest pretty quick, but I wanted to ask you one last question. From 1884 to 1924, between the Russians and the Anglos, the British, you know, what effect did that have on Iran and Afghanistan? And even when the Bolsheviks came to power under Lenin, what effects did that also have on Iran? If you quickly just
sure.
tell us that.
That is, in fact, the main topic of my dissertation. For my doctorate degree. I studied by using all the facilities that Library of Congress provided during that period that I was working for my PhD, and I studied about that period, and I noticed that one of the most important historical factors for underdevelopment of two major countries that I call them non-Arab Middle East, Afghanistan and Iran, one important factor for their underdevelopment was bloody rivalry between Tsarist Russia and British Empire, which finally made Iran and Afghanistan to become from a viable, independent Asian countries, that they were very viable, they were very, very independent countries, gradually at the beginning of 20th century to become two distinct, underdeveloped, peripheral countries in the service of multinational corporations and British government during that period. So I focused on that topic. And naturally, Bolshevik Revolution, for a short period, brought hope that Iran and Afghanistan may liberate themselves from this imperial oppression, but we know that events moved in a direction that instead of Iran becoming liberated or Afghanistan, they became victims of fascism by the beginning of the Second World War.
Well, thank you for being on our show. We're honored to have you. We've been speaking with Dr. Binab. He is a professor of political science at Strayer University in Washington, D.C. He is speaking on this Thursday, July 3rd at 7 p.m. at the SFU Harbor Center, Labatt Hall, and the admission is by donation. The forum is called Who Benefits from War? And this event's organized by the Iranian Center for Peace, Freedom, and Social Justice, and it's sponsored by StopWar.ca. So please try and make it down. It sounds like it should be very interesting. He'll be talking about war and who benefits from war. And so I think thanks again for being
Thank
here.
Thank you very much.
And I think we're going to take a short break.
Yeah, we're going to take a short break. Just a reminder, listening audience, you're listening to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, CFRO. This is Monday Brown Bagger. The date is June 30th, 2008. And we're going to take a quick break and go on to our next guest.
A signatory of the Geneva Convention.
I don't know.
Something my
You've been asked to leave.
I'm independent. I'm not with these guys.
You've been asked to leave.
Uncle Fox, that almost died for in World War II.
I'm an independent. I'm just recording this. This is bullshit. I'm just documenting this. I'm not moving, dude.
You're under arrest.
I'm surprised they would arrest a videographer.
Yeah.
There was strictly no cameras allowed inside. They were checking all the bags and everything to make sure we didn't have anything. But luckily I had my trusty little digicam that I had in my pocket, and I didn't find that.
If we take too much counsel of our fears, if we act like we're afraid, what we have to do is stand tall and make sure that everybody knows that we remember we are a nation of nations. We touch every nation. Every nation touches us. And we will not be terrified into changing our way of life because of some guy hiding in a cave somewhere in Pakistan.
Although they sold tickets on the premise of no questions off limits, these were the types of questions that were fed to the audience by the moderator.
The Stanley Cup playoffs just ended, but we want to know Lakers or Celtics.
I got a question, actually, Mr. Powell.
We asked for written submissions, and we've got to stick to that format. Thank you very much, sir.
You didn't sell tickets.
Written questions only. Thank you.
Welcome back to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM. This is Monday Brown Bagger. It's June 30th. We now have in the studio with us right now the cameraman that was arrested by the Vancouver Police Department, Michael Barcelona. That's an interesting name because I remember the name because Spain had the Olympics over in Barcelona. I just said so. I remembered the name when you said your name. You probably never heard that before. So,
well, I'm actually a Sicilian descent, but I'll be Spanish for the day.
And what the first question I have to ask you is, what are the ramifications going to be if you're charged, and you know, with the current situation happening right now with the United States, and you know, they want passports, they want driver's license, they want, you know, birth certificate in order to get across the border. How is this going to affect your chances to get across and get future employment? You know, is this going to basically cause any trouble for you with that?
Well, simply put, it's going to throw a monkey wrench into my future. I've recently changed my careers from one to the other, and I've been a videographer since 98 and had moved to Vancouver in 2004 to pursue this new career. And now since things are up and running, I've retrained myself. I'm finding that there's a great chance that I'll have opportunities to work in the States. But if I get charged, those opportunities will be no longer for reasons out of my control.
The event was a lecture given by Colin Powell.
Yes, it was.
And where was that?
The Vancouver Convention Center.
And can you describe for us, what happened that day?
Well, if you can picture a fly on a wall, that would have been me. And when you see a fly on the wall, usually they're not able to speak, which that was me. I was there strictly to document and videotape for the protesters. And I did my job professionally. I did not say a word all day long. I was there as eyes and ears for the protesters. I was not on the bullhorn. I was not chanting. I was not stating facts. I was there as a silent observer.
And what exactly were you charged with?
Assault by trespass on a public sidewalk, which I did a bit of research. The Vancouver Convention Center, I believe, is owned by the BC Pavilion Corporation, which is a crown corporation owned by the Government of Canada. So I think that gives me every right to be there.
But we can thank P3s for that. What P3s are is that the taxpayers have to pay for the government to go contract out to a corporation, so the corporation will manage their businesses, which the taxpayers own anyway. So what it is, it's nothing more than corporate welfare to feed more money into the pocketbooks of the elitist on the back, while at the same time breaking the backs of the ordinary citizen. With that said, we also have Travis on the line right now, and Travis is from We Are Change. Travis is the one that provided me with the auto, and he's also good friends with Michael here. Travis?
Yeah, hey guys. Hey, Reg. How you doing?
Thank you so much for calling in. Do you want to add some stuff to what's happening in regards to Michael?
Well, yeah. I mean, right off the bat, I must say that this whole incident's rather absurd, to tell you the truth. I think Michael just basically went through it. He was not protesting whatsoever. The whole incident was sort of shocked us all. I'm worried about the rise of fascism in Vancouver, and my main concern with We Are Change Vancouver is why our government feels the need in the wake of the Olympics to roll out the red carpet to neocon war criminals. Colin Powell has a long history of lies, and it just takes a simple Google search. You do a Google search of Colin Powell war crimes, and you'll understand why it's absurd that he was even invited to Canada and not arrested at the border. Gail Davidson from Lawyers Against War petitioned Diane Finley, our immigration minister, to not even allow Powell into the country. So that's why We Are Change originally got involved in this. And we wanted to confront Colin Powell on war crimes and depleted uranium use. So while we were doing that inside the venue, I had asked a favor out of Michael, who's a friend in the film business, to just document the protesters. I just said, just shoot him, Mike. You know, don't get involved with it. If you could just shoot him, cover the action out front, that'd be great. So while I was getting, I was actually getting escorted out of the venue by the Vancouver Police Department for asking Colin Powell a real question, Michael was getting arrested outside for filming on a sidewalk. So, you know, the whole thing is an attack on the independent press. It's an attack on, it's one of the most anti-Canadian actions I've actually seen in quite some time. And it should really raise the alarms, ring the bells for all Canadians and all Vancouverites. We really need to nip this in the bud. And I would hope that Crown Council comes to their senses and does the right thing and immediately drops the charges against Michael. In fact, I think Michael might have a case in a counter lawsuit because the police officer went after him and had threatened earlier to break his camera. So, you know, kind of where we're at right now, Reg.
And so I can imagine the four, or did you buy tickets to this event?
Yeah, there was four of us with We Are Change Vancouver that bought tickets to go into the venue. The organizers, DSJ Communications, had sold tickets on the premise that no questions would be off limits. So we went in there, you know, we bought our tickets, and we went in there with a couple of questions for Mr. Powell. What they did is they provided cue cards, which people would fill out their questions. So they basically lied about how they were going to do the question-answer period. They supplied these cue cards. You were to write down your question, and then they would pick out of the bunch. So the whole thing was staged. It was a complete fraud. The questions that came at Mr. Powell were, Mr. Powell, what do you like better, the iPhone or the BlackBerry? I mean, come on, as if anybody in that venue wrote that question. The next question was, Mr. Powell, who are you going to go for, the Lakers or the Celtics? Like, just absolute softballs. Probably his own press guy wrote the questions. It was ridiculous. So, yeah, that's when I stepped up and I asked.
Yeah, we have an audio of that.
Great, yeah. Have you played that, Reg?
Yeah, we played the audio that you provided. Thank you so much for providing that. And, yeah, just listening to it when they're directing James out and they're standing there and clapping like walking zombies, you know. If you ever read 1984, you feel like Big Brother is already controlled a lot of the masses and it'd be time to wake up, people. That's all I can say. But, you know, is it being a Canadian Armed Forces veteran and served almost 9 years in the Canadian Force, it's been over to the Middle East, is I'm appalled that any Canadian can stand there like, ugh, me basically a caveman, me gonna clap now. Excuse me, but I say to the people that did that, you know, if you haven't done your time in the military, don't bother standing up and don't bother opening your mouth, because what happens is you don't know what you're talking about, and I'm just appalled that any Canadian could be like that. I'm sorry about that, Travis, but that's just touching me right to the bone.
Well, that's exactly it, and I actually had researched Powell thoroughly up until this event. I spent 6 weeks researching his history. So, you know, you had 1,500 sheep that clapped him off, that, you know, thinking that he's this hero, when in fact the guy's a war criminal. I mean, it's clear cut. He's broken more Geneva Convention and Nuremberg Principle laws than almost anyone on the planet. You know, absolutely ridiculous that he was allowed into the country. So fair enough. That's one thing. That's our Stephen Harper conservative government not stepping up and doing the right thing. They're part and parcel with these guys with the neocon filth that's starting to make Vancouver a destination. But what concerns me, obviously, is their VPD. The VPD, to be all in all honesty, were great for the whole thing. They were letting the protesters bullhorn the venue. It was no problem. They were actually pretty good. But then at some point, I think they were told that the guests were not to see any protesters on their way out, and that's when Michael got targeted and taken out. And why they went after the cameraman is still anybody's guess. I mean, my theory is that Mike had shot him earlier, being confronted by a protester. The same individual, the same officer, was confronted by a protester earlier. Michael was filming that, and the video footage shows the officer looking at Michael and kind of steering. A little later on, that officer threatens Michael with smashing his camera. So this is a Vancouver Police Department member that not only tried to break his camera, but has now thrown him in jail for 8 hours and now wants to stick him with an assault charge in the record and take away Mike's future livelihood. And I got a major, major problem with that. And I think everybody listening to Co-op Radio today should have a major problem with police. That's just overstepping their bounds and goes against everything that Canadians stand for, to tell you the truth.
Well, it seems like this incident could be taken to the Human Rights Commission, the UN Human Rights Commission. What do you think about that?
Well, I know that the BC Civil Liberties president, I think his name is Murray Mollard or something, is actually quite concerned about this case. Lawyers Against War is quite concerned about this case, and I think everyone needs to be quite concerned about this case. If if you look at the 1930s and the rise of fascism in Germany, there's a lot of parallels to what's going on right now in North America, and even Vancouver in particular. So yeah, I mean, we're going to play it by ear. I just got off the phone with Mr. Stan Lowe, who's the media spokesperson for the Crown Council. I just got off the phone with Stan, and he said he couldn't comment on the case. He said he's going to have an answer for me within a week on what they're going to do with this. But, you know, I would just, you know, I would ask Crown Council, if they hear this broadcast, that they do the right thing. And you know what? I think there's more of a concern on the behavior of the police officer in question. One of our protesters actually inside the venue was physically assaulted and bounced out of the venue. She's a 50-year-old ballet teacher. She was manhandled out of the venue. That's the only assault that I saw. The whole incident was VPD on a 50-year-old woman. And,
5 foot and a, tall woman too, right?
Oh yeah, exactly.
Sweet looking lady.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I think you know, people really need to start paying attention. Reg, I've talked to you before about this, and Mike's learned the hard way that people really need to start paying attention. Fascism is creeping in. I'm sorry to say, but it really is. And I don't think it's worth selling our soul for the Vancouver 2010 Games, because that's what it looks like. Vancouver's selling its soul for these Olympic Games. We've got Giuliani coming to town next month. We got Zbigniew Brzezinski coming to town next month. We just had Karl Rove come to town 2 months ago. So why they're rolling out the red carpet for these scumbags is anybody's guess. But this is not what Vancouver is all about. And you got this right-wing scum tank called the Fraser Institute that's inviting all these bastards to our city, and it needs to stop. You know, I don't want to be a protesting leftist. I'm not a leftist. I'm a libertarian, if anything. I got other things I'd rather be doing, but it's time to take a stand, people. It's time to get involved. It's time to do some civil duties. It's time to get in the streets and get active. If not, you're going to have your country's going to get dismembered.
Yeah, that's so true there, Travis. Before I continue on, I'd like to thank Jeff and Diane Jules, who normally does this program this week. I'm not on until next week and then schedule that they were gracious enough to allow me to have the time to do the program, to talk to Dr. Bernab and also talk to Michael, Travis. If you're out there listening, Diane and Jeff, thank you so much. And they're going to be back in 3 weeks' time. So, you know, on Monday Brown Bagger, we really believe in teamwork and we really believe in supporting each other. And that's so great to see. But also, I had a printout, which Travis also forwarded over to me. And there's a phone number on it. Lo and behold, it says, call Crown Council, 604-660-4353. I say again, 604-660-4353. So everyone out there in listening land, please call in. And what happens is, because you're not going to be talking on the radio and you don't have to adhere to CRTC policies, that whatever language you choose to use, you know, there won't be any sort of censorship happening there. So we hope that a lot of the listening audience will call that number and be very frank and very open with what they, you know, and very colorful at the same time with how they don't appreciate how Michael was handled, or don't appreciate how that 50-year-old lady was handled, 5-foot-tall lady. Same size as my late grandmother, who was 5 foot nothing, 95 pounds soaking wet. And I'm going to tell you something right now. If I was watching that, I would basically walk up to that guy and I'd say, excuse me, why don't you handle someone your own size? But more than likely, the guy's probably a coward. That's just my opinion now. You know, I'm just basically stating it as I see it. And what happens is that we have a quick question for you then, Mike, because it looks like we're running out of time. Now, with everything you're seeing happening right now, and as Travis is talking about the rise of Nazism, and as I've personally experienced my own life, what are you seeing in the future? Do you see any chance of enough of the Canadian people waking up in time to basically to save our democracy before we march towards the North American Union, before we march towards a global government, or you know, or stock market crash, and the list goes on and on?
Sorry, Mike. Go ahead.
I really hope that we wake up real quick, because it's just becoming clearer and clearer that if we don't do something now, we may not have a chance later. So it's scary. I was oblivious to everything that was going on up until I was arrested, and now it just seems that we do have to do something. And if we don't do it, we're screwed.
That's exactly right, Mike. And let me just add, we'll be, you know, it's just a couple more steps till people are put into, you know, I guess I'm a dissident or an activist now. I don't really want to have that label. I see myself more as independent media. But if people don't really, Reg, what I was going to say is if people know that a lot of things that are going on right now are wrong. It's not that people don't know. It's the disconnect between them knowing and not doing anything about it. And that's what we are, Change Vancouver, is trying to bridge that disconnect. A lot of people that I talk to, Reg, yeah, the North American Union's nonsense. What's up with, you know, they're complaining about everything, but they're sitting at home and complaining and not getting out in the streets. And I want to stress that we always advocate peaceful, Gandhi-esque activism. We're not out to throw paints on walls or any of that nonsense. We want to keep it very peaceful. We also want to have our voices heard. And unfortunately, being a keyboard warrior and typing at home isn't good enough. You know, you got to be writing your MPs. You've got to, you know, I recommend to all my friends that they do anywhere from 5 to 10 hours a week, part of their civic duties. Now, if you don't do that 5 or 10 hours a week, I personally do probably 4 hours a day. But if you don't put some time in on a, you know, on a weekly basis and making Canada a better and a freer country, then we're all screwed. So that's the thing, is getting rid of people's apathy. That's where We Are Change Vancouver is trying to really focus on.
Yeah, what happens is, I agree with you there, Travis, because I think that I'm not advocating violence in any way. And what happens is that as I was talking to you the other night, I said to, I'll say to everyone out in listening land, you know, if I was ever to stop speaking out, what would happen is everything that happened to my wife and I, which is, I show some of it on my own website, angus-mcleod.com, all of the injustices, the persecution, the threats, and even the $30,000 medical bill from the United States, 2 weeks in the hospital, mysterious disease, almost died from. And the list goes on and on. I mean, what happens is that everything I went through, people like yourself and everyone else would have to endure the exact same thing. And also, as I was interviewing Jack McLeod two weeks ago, there was, he talked about the red, blue, and yellow list. So just everyone listening out there, just remember the red, blue, and yellow list. And it looks like we're running out of time. Tanya has about 30 seconds to say something. Go ahead, Tanya.
Oh, I just wanted to say again, please call Crown Council, call your MPs. The number for the Crown Council is 604-660-4353.
Well, thank you very much for coming on, Michael. Thank you for calling in, Travis. And thank you, as always, Tanya, for coming in and helping out. This is Monday Brown Bagger. You're listening. It's June 30th. And again, I thank you, Jeff and Diane Jules, for allowing us to have this time. You are truly great people. And what happens is I will be handing over my show either in September or October date. I'll be changing with them at a later time. So they're going to be filling in for me at that time. And what happens is that this is Monday Brown Bagger, June 30th. You're listening to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, CFRO, Monday Brown Bagger.
Thanks a lot, guys. We are changevancouver.org's the site. Get involved, get active, get in contact with me.